Good afternoon, it's BBC Radio Humberside, through till 4 o'clock, the afternoon show with Jeremy Buxton, and we bring you the best celebrities and pure nostalgia. Through till 3 o'clock, our special guest, welcome to Angela Rippon, hello.
Hello, Jeremy.
Now, we're looking back on In a Lifetime, and we've been looking back to 1983, of course, TVAM. That one was one of the news stories that came out. I suppose you've got a few memories of that particular time.
Yes, none of them very nice ones, unfortunately. It was not a very happy time. And well, yes, there are some nice ones, of course. I mean, working with Parky and with Anna and the whole team was absolutely smashing. But, I mean, the whole thing just fell apart at the seams and turned very nasty. And even still, to this day, leaves a very unpleasant taste in the mouth.
What made you go into TV journalism in the first place?
Well, it sort of happened by accident, really. I'd always wanted to be a journalist. I wanted to be a photographer, actually, because I'd taken photographs from when I was really very, very young. My dad gave me a box brownie. And, I mean, I'd always been interested in that. And a job came up in the local newspaper for a microfilm photographer. And I saw this as a way of getting into the photographic department. So I joined the paper. I left school. I mean, I was in great disgrace because I left in the middle of supposedly doing my A-levels and going off to university. I mean, my name was Mud, I can tell you, for years. And so off I trolled and went to the local newspaper and took photographs. I mean, as well as doing the job I was doing, I kind of wheedled my way in. I learnt how to process film and develop it and to print photographs. And I would take the occasional photograph which the paper would print, and then I would write the occasional article and sometimes illustrate it as well. And after I'd done this for a couple of years, I thought, right, that's it. I'm now going to apply for a job as a journalist. And because I thought what I want to do is be a photojournalist, combine the picture taking with the writing. And I applied to the newspaper on which I was working, which was the daily paper then, the Western Morning News, and they said, sorry, no vacancies. So I went to the Sunday paper, which ran two weekly newspapers as well, and I did a 3.5-year apprenticeship with them as a journalist. And it was just as I was coming to the end of that that the paper on which I was working was bought by the Daily Mirror Group, and because they decided that they needed a regional newspaper to use as a training bed for young journalists and photographers. And I wasn't in that scheme, but all the top brass, I remember, came down from London and said, well, what do you want to do? And I told them, and they said, fine, all right, go away and work for Fleetway magazines as a photojournalist. And at exactly the same time, the BBC in Plymouth rang me up and said, we're looking for a new reporter, and we've seen a lot of your bylines on the things that you've done. Would you like to come up and see us? And I remember thinking, I was just coming to the end of my 3.5 years apprenticeship. And I thought, well, I'll get my indentures. I now know how to be a journalist, and I can always go back to that if it doesn't work. So it doesn't really matter. And off I went to the local telly station, and I've kind of been there ever since. And do you know, that was 30 years ago this year.
Gosh. Wow.
Yeah, I did my very first broadcast on September the 6th, 30 years ago this year, in 1969.
Now, what prompted the move to of course, the BBC News, along with Richard Baker and Kenneth Kendall, in the good old days of BBC News?
Oh, they were good old days, actually, I have to tell you. Well, what happened was I moved after a couple of years across to the ITV station in the West Country, and I was doing all sorts of wonderful things there, making documentaries, producing my own programmes, editing and fronting. I mean, it was glorious days of television when you did everything because, you know, there weren't enough people around to do anything else and nobody had any money.
It sounds like nowadays.
It doesn't change much, actually, does it? I mean, so I used to write my own programmes, present them, produce them, direct my own films, and it was wonderful. And I was kind of being pushed more and more into, if you like, I suppose, a sort of desk job rather than being out doing the work. And I remember I had to go and see the programme controller one day, and he kept me waiting. And while I was waiting in his outer office, I picked up one of the trade papers, and I saw this advert for a reporter in television news in London, and I thought, I'll apply for that. So I did, and they gave me the job. And I was a reporter with them for a couple of years, and they sent me, I was wonderful. I mean, they sent me all over Europe reporting for them, Northern Ireland as well. We all had to do our stint in Northern Ireland in those days. And then they put me on the political programme, and from that somebody said, oh, looks as if she can kind of do stuff in the studio as well, so why don't we get her to read the news? And the rest is kind of history.
Because one thing that happened was Morecambe and Wise. Now, that at the time was fairly radical, wasn't it, to have, I mean, having South Pacific and having Kenneth Kendall, Richard Baker and yourself all doing that Christmas special, and then you doing the various numbers with Eric and Ernie.
It was, but I mean, the thing was, the tradition had already been set in that they'd already had lots of people who had nothing to do with variety in their show. I mean, if you look back and you remember in the 60s and the 70s and then the very early 80s, I mean, the Morecambe and Wise Christmas show was the show of the year. And they made a feature out of showcasing someone like Glenda Jackson. She'd never done comedy before, you know, until she did the famous scene as Cleopatra. They had Robin Day doing a really funny sketch with them. And Andre Previn, who I to this day think of as Andrew Preview with the boys in the band. Yes. I mean, doing that wonderful piece with the piano.
You're still doing a bit of journalism on The Big Breakfast, aren't you?
Well, I wouldn't call that journalism. I mean, I read the news on it. But I am still doing journalism, yes. I mean, I did my own news and current affairs radio show in London for 3 years, which was kind of prime time and won lots of awards, which was lovely. And I'm making a documentary at the moment for American television about the American presidential elections. I still kind of go from hard news and current affairs to doing things like a couple of news radio programs that I'm doing for Radio 2, which are pure music. Mm-hmm. I've got an interview series that I'm doing for ITV, which is going to go out later this year, which is just a straight head-to-head, face-to-face, half-hour interview with people in the entertainment industry, and a series that I'm doing for BBC One with Anton Mossiman, the chef, which is great fun. He does the cooking and I do the talking, and it's lovely, and we all eat together at the end. It's wonderful.
I was going to say, who gets to eat the food afterwards?
We do.
Now, we'll talk about a new campaign that you've launched in just a moment, but a choice of music from you.
Well, you know, it's the awful thing. You know, when I did Desert Island Discs and Roy Plumley said you can have 8 and that's it, I thought, oh, I agonised over the 8 and you said I can have 1. I mean, it's terrible. But I thought, well, let's have something nice and bright and cheery. And I'm terribly fond of Neil Sedaka, and he did a wonderful track on an album, and I saw him do it live once in concert called Superbird.